From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when the newest edition of the New York State Legislature arrived in Albany, ready to do the people's business. There are some significant changes in 2019. Democrats now fully control the legislature, including the state Senate. No more breakaway leadership. Democrats, if they are unified in their agenda, could essentially pass whatever they want. That doesn't mean that all Democrats agree on all things. There are debates about single-payer health care, climate policy, and a lot more. And Republicans are working to keep conservative voices in the state conversation, even if they don't have the numbers to pass the bills that they would want. Well, this hour we've asked state lawmakers to join us. We're discussing what has already happened in Albany, including the passage of legislation designed to bolster the rights of transgender New Yorkers. That was one of the first things on the table. We're going to talk about priorities in the legislative year to come, and everything from taxes to economic development, wages, to marijuana, and more. And our guests include three members of the New York State Assembly with us right here in studio. And two Republicans are here. Marjorie Burns, welcome, Assemblywoman Burns. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Also with us is Mark Johns, Assemblyman Johns. Welcome back to the program. Thank you.
Good to be back, Evan.
And a Democrat in studio, Harry Bronson. Assemblyman Bronson, welcome. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
I want to mention as well that we reached out to a number of other lawmakers. Assemblywoman Jamie Romeo is unavailable, had to attend to private matters this afternoon. And we do have a statement that I'll read a little bit later from State Senator Rich Funke, State Senator Joe Robach, unavailable this hour. We also have Karen DeWitt on the line, our Capitol correspondent, the chief of our reporting in Albany. And it's always great to have Karen DeWitt. How are you?
I'm great, Evan.
Well, why don't you, Karen, sort of set the table for those who might have missed the events of this week. There's a lot going on. You can't blame everyone for not seeing everything, Karen. And what are the big headlines so far coming out of Albany?
Yeah, it's really been kind of a big change that the year has started off so dynamically with a number of bills already being approved. Usually nothing happens until the budget in late March or April, and then you don't get any substantive issues done until June. Governor Cuomo released his state budget 2 weeks early. It was a laundry list of proposals, including legalizing marijuana, raising the cigarette buying age from 18 to 21, $150 billion in infrastructure projects over 5 years, banning plastic shopping bags, congestion pricing in New York City. But unlike a lot of years, there's an expectation that a lot of this stuff is actually going to get done. And as I think you mentioned, and I just mentioned, the legislature has already acted on GENDA to give transgender New Yorkers rights, has already acted on a number of early voting measures. So things, unusually for Albany, things are happening.
Okay. And do you expect that this will continue, given that so often we see the governor's state of the state, we see then the budget address, and then there is sort of the shift of focus to the governor puts out a proposal, the legislature wants usually more money for education, they debate it back and forth, things often come pretty close to that April 1 deadline. Do you see it going that way this year, or do you think that we're going to see kind of more of the early action continue, Karen?
Well, that's going to happen, too. I mean, there is going to be an argument over school aid. The governors always propose less money than the legislature wants and then kind of lets the legislature fight to have that back. So that's going to be one of the fights. But because the legislature is newly Democratic for the first time in a long, long time, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that they can pass. A lot of bills that have been, you know, kind of languishing for years that didn't pass in the Republican-controlled Senate, like the early voting and GENDA and the Reproductive Rights Act, which would codify the abortion rights in Roe v. Wade into law. So those bills are, have been set up. They've been written for years. They're ready to go. So it's pretty easy for them to get a lot of those bills done this year. I mean, who knows what will happen in future years, but certainly right now there's a lot of things that are just really teed up and ready to go that they're taking action on pretty methodically. They've got a plan for every week in January to pass something significant.
All right, so a couple of quick questions before we let you go, Karen, and then we'll turn to the lawmakers in studio here. This is a case, isn't it, where the Democrats will have to turn to voters eventually and say, we had no excuses. If we want to pass things, we've got a lot of control, and if we work to get things done together, you know, essentially, no offense to the Republican studio, the Democrats don't need them, and they will have no excuses if they don't pass what's on their agenda. Is that fair?
No, I think that you're right, but I think the Democrats will have a pretty easy time, at least this year, possibly next year. I mean, the big question mark is, are we going to go into a recession? We already saw the personal income tax revenues dropping in the last quarter of 2018. So if we go into a recession and then it's all about what do we cut, then they're going to have a harder time. But certainly for right now, they're going to have pretty easy first few months.
Yeah. And then on the Republican side, you know, our listeners can decide for themselves if they're comfortable with any sort of state setup where it is kind of monolithic on one party or another. And there are plenty of states where Republicans control just about everything, Democrats control just about everything. But what are you seeing in terms of the Republicans' work toward at least being a voice that has an impact here, Karen?
Well, they seem a little bit shell-shocked, the Senate Republicans. They've had a couple press conferences, you know, and I have certainly tried to pay attention to them, but it's really not the same. They really don't have the power that they did. But certainly a lot of upstaters are, I think, you know, have a right to be concerned, because the Republicans in the Senate, maybe some of the more liberal people upstate might not have agreed with them on social issues, but they certainly looked out for upstate in a way that upstate may get overshadowed, because there's going to be a lot of attention to the New York City suburbs, Long Island, Westchester, and the tax issues. And they have many issues in common with upstate, but not all issues in common.
Karen, I always appreciate it. And I know we look forward to a lot of reporting from you as this session gets going. Thanks for taking the time for the program this afternoon.
Sure, absolutely. Anytime.
Karen DeWitt from Albany, one of the very best, and we're always great, always benefit from her coverage for us. So there we are here, and we've got three members of the New York State Assembly with us in studio. Harry Bronson, a Democrat, Marjorie Burns, Mark Johns, Republicans with us. Assemblyman Bronson, is this a no-excuses year for your party?
Yeah, Evan, I think you're right. We control the Assembly, as we have in the past. We control the Senate, and we have a Democratic governor. So I think the expectations are high. I think that the first week we passed agenda banning conversion therapy, and then next week we're going to take a women's rights package up, do the Reproductive Health Act, contraception requirements and insurance, and a number of other things. So we're hit the ground running, and the difference is we're doing it in such a way where it's an agreement by the Assembly and the Senate to move bills simultaneously on the same day and deliver them to the governor when we choose as a legislative body. So that's going to be different and I think effective. And then, you know, the governor put out a very different budget this year than he has in the past. Many of your listeners have heard me talk about my primary principle, and that is no matter who you are, where you come from, what you look like, who you love, how you identify, we all have inherent dignity. And with that, we deserve full equality, justice, and an opportunity to succeed. And that touches every area that I've been working on. The governor puts out an agenda that is a social justice agenda, a economic justice agenda, and a justice for all agenda. That's how he packaged his budget. So that's very consistent with the way I've been approaching governance. And I think that it's consistent with the Assembly and consistent with the Senate Dems. So I think we're going to get a lot of good things done this year.
That said, it's impossible to get everything that you want. There's going to be debate within your party about health care and other issues.
Sure.
What would be top of your list if you had one or two things that you really wanted to see happen this year above all others?
Yeah, the number one, the education, and there'll be some debate there, making sure that we go forward with fully funding our education system and supporting our children's education. Number two would be what I've been working on as chair of the Commission of Skills Development and Career Education, which I'm no longer that chair, but workforce development. But now, since I'm the liaison for the Assembly to the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council, again, the governor is consistent. He is now making workforce development a core part of economic development, so that's important. For me, infrastructure is number three, and in connection with that infrastructure is a bill that I've passed for the last 2 years. The governor mentioned it in the State of the State, and that's prevailing wages and how that applies to projects that the state is subsidizing. And then last, I'm now chair of aging, so I'm going to have a new wheelhouse, if you will, and I have to get up to speed on aging issues. And in that, I'm going to be working on, again, the governor, $15 million in the budget to help people age in their homes longer and with a better quality of life. My predecessor as chair has been working on that. I'm adding three other priorities there. One is going to be workforce development. How do we do a better job of expanding the workforce for home care aides and others in the that serve the aging? LGBT aging, many of my friends in our community, as they age, are forced back into the closet because there's not a competency of service there. And then also making sure that we work for people who are required to work longer as they age in the workforce. How do we have flexible schedules? How can we require work rules that will support our older workers who are required to stay because of financial reasons?
All right, Assemblyman Mark Johns, you are no stranger to being an assemblyman in a minority party. I wonder, does it feel any different this time in 2019? Because as Karen DeWitt says here, you know, the Senate Democrats don't have a breakaway group that's working with Republicans. I'm curious to know sort of the tenor of how things feel in Albany so far for Republicans.
Well, they feel the same for us. You know,
they do. Huh?
Nothing's changed in the assembly. So, you know, as I think Harry pointed out, there are no excuses anymore. You know, I ran. In fact, Harry and I were elected in the same year in 2010. And even before I got there, I was talking about reform. And I truly believe if you have real reform, you wind up getting better legislation. And I'll continue to push for that. You know, I mean, there's a laundry list of what people want. Starts off with term limits, unicameral legislature, which would save upwards of $150 million a year, two-year budget cycles, so schools and nonprofits, everybody knows what they're going to get in advance. That would save tens of millions more because in the second year, we wouldn't have to meet as often. The SOLE Act, which is legislative equality, we pass all kind of equality bills down there. I think that would be a good one. And the final one is the referendum bill. I call it the FDR bill. It stands for Fairness and Democratic Reform Act. I know it would be hard for Harry to vote against FDR. But you know, it's a good idea, I think, that at the end of session, we're done in the end of June. Mm-hmm. Let the public go out. And this is not initiative and referendum. You will not initiate the legislation yourself. But let the public go out there and get signatures for our bills, and we'll take the three most popular bills and put it on the ballot. We talk about everybody coming out to vote. If we let the public go out in June and July, take any of our bills, get the required number of signatures statewide, and put it on the ballot, just think, we'd be talking about it on public radio, commercial radio, TV, you know, you name it. We'd be talking about the issues, and people could be their own legislators. We allow people to vote on gambling casinos, which in this area lost, but why not let them vote on the issues that they think are important, and we have the bills corresponding to them.
All right. Assemblywoman Burns, you're a first-termer there.
I am.
I wonder how things have been in your first days in Albany.
Well, it hasn't been that long now that since we've been there. And my apologies, I think I'm starting to come down with a cold. So if my voice comes and goes,
no problem.
Just bear with me. I don't know what it was like before, being new. So I don't have anything to gauge it by. But what I do know is that I was elected to go there and to be a voice for my communities and for my district. And I did have some concerns when I listened to the governor's State of the State message about how upstate is going to fare. And I hope that Democrats like Mr. Bronson will work with us on issues that ultimately affect upstate and the upstate economy, because we are going to need you, sir. And there are a lot of issues that are incredibly important. As we spoke about before when I was here during the summer or during the fall, in my district, agriculture and small farms and small businesses that are struggling, and a lot of them are closing and or leaving town. People are unemployed or underemployed. And as a result, we don't have that tax base in order to be able to adequately fund some of our villages and our towns. We really need to keep our population here. And my district uniformly loses about 4% mm-hmm. every census.
How can we do that, at least from a state priority?
Right. I think we absolutely have to do something to give some tax relief to middle-income farms, businesses, and also individual taxpayers. Because most of my district is composed of people who are middle to low income, and they're struggling right now. And a lot of the bills that go through, no disrespect, Mr. Bronson, have a lot of unfunded mandates. And these unfunded mandates put even more burdens on their local communities and their local towns and counties. So it's exceedingly important that we do something to keep the businesses here, which will keep the people here, which will keep our tax base here. But I also agree with Mr. Bronson that infrastructure is huge in my district. Not just roads and bridges, although I just left a meeting this morning in Cohocton with the village mayor and the town supervisor, where the state of their bridges and their lack of ability to get funds was a major concern of theirs. But other than that, one thing that surprised me was the lack of broadband access. There are places in my district, even in Monroe County, in the town of Wheatland, where you cannot get broadband access. And people are concerned that should there even be a car accident on their roads, they can't even call 911. So these types of, and this is in Monroe County. We're not talking about going down into the hills in Prattsburg and Cohocton and Wayland, in rural areas of Livingston. So this is incredibly important because also that's something that'll help keep businesses here. I've been told by a number of businesses in Caledonia that they have problems even running through credit card transactions sometimes, so it's difficult to do business. And lastly, just in general, something to help our dairy farmers, our farms in general and our dairy farmers, because we have a lot that have not many cows, but in the 200 to 300 range, and they're the ones who have the most difficulty in securing grants and loans because they don't have the overall equity and capital already invested in their farms in order to have something that makes it look advantageous to give them more money for the future. So, I mean, I appreciate that these gentlemen come from more urban areas, but down in southern Monroe, Steuben, and Livingston County, we do have some real issues, and I am hopeful that the Democrats will work with us and that we can help the people in our areas too.
Let me also ask you, Assemblywoman Burns, when obviously we have a large state in terms of area, there's always going to be different lifestyles and different kinds of sort of day-to-day habits if you live in a big city versus if you live, as you say, in rural areas, if you...
Sure.
Yeah, that's normal. I am wondering, though, if you feel like when you talk to voters in rural areas, they feel like Albany doesn't get them, or if you feel that there's a disconnect that is more than just, hey, if you live in a city, it's a different sort of day-to-day life than it is in a rural area.
Right. It's not a question of do I feel that way. They tell me. Even this morning in Cohocton, there was about 10 people in the room from village and town government, and they flat out said that they don't think that Albany cares one iota about them. We're rural, relatively Republican, although there are Democrats you want to come down and help too, Mr. Bronson, and not just you, but you're here, so it's easy to point to you. But no, to the Democrats in general. And agriculture is the number one industry in our state, and it's the number one industry in my district. So if we're going to survive as a state, we need to survive even in these small rural communities. So I do hope that when all is said and done, that the governor and the assembly and the Senate will help us.
Well, I think Assemblyman Bronson, I'm trying to remember your own background. I mean, you have some experience living that way, don't you?
I grew up on a farm.
Okay.
Very good.
So there you go. So what would you say to your colleague there?
Yeah. So first of all, I would say my district is not an urban district. In fact, 60% of my district is in suburban or rural parts of this county. I have a lot of farms in the town of Chilai. I have a lot of farms in the town of Henrietta. I've worked very hard on agriculture. Up until this year, I sat on the agriculture committee. And I think you will be very surprised when you start going through the budget process and you see how much the assembly fights for the programs that support our agriculture industry. It's a lot more than what senators do. So we have focused on agriculture. I think the Assemblywoman pointed it out. It's our number one industry. Can we do more? Absolutely, we need to do more. So, you know, this is an area that we can partner on. I think we can also partner in the infrastructure. The governor mentioned broadband in his State of the State address. We can partner on that. We have a lot of assembly members who actually represent rural areas. So, you know, we're going to continue that work. And I will also point out, I've had conversations with both Senator Robach, Senator Funke, as well as Senator Gallivan about ways that I will be supportive of them and what they're asking for, especially in the budget, so that we can continue to take care of our region here in the Finger Lakes.
Let me go ahead and read a statement from Senator Rich Funke, who was invited, could not join us on the program. He says, while I'm still reviewing the specifics of the governor's budget proposal, one thing seems clear. This budget ignores the needs of upstate New York. Budgets are about addressing problems and setting priorities. Upstate New York's economy is ailing. The causes of that illness are clear. Our state taxes too much, spends too much, and believes that small businesses are a piggy bank rather than an economic engine. This budget simply provides more of the same. The budget also includes various policy proposals, some of which I support, like the Child Victims Act and raising the age to buy tobacco to 21, and some of which I oppose, such as the legalization of marijuana and banning plastic bags. Regardless of my position on any individual issue, I am forced to ask once again this year why these proposals are in the budget in the first place. In the past, the governor has blamed the Republican Senate for this, claiming he had to put progressive ideas in the budget in order to make us consider them. With Democrats in control of every level of state government, what is the excuse now? The answer is clear. The policy is in the budget because this governor cares more about exerting control than he does about the separation of powers inherent in our system. That is from State Senator Rich Funke, critical of the governor's state of the state and budget priorities set by Governor Andrew Cuomo. So you're hearing various perspective listeners. If you want to weigh in, and I have some questions from listeners already that have come in via email, which I'll get to. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. When it comes to early voting, I want to address, here's Alex writing to us saying, I'm curious what the panelists' thoughts are on the recent changes to New York State voting and elections with the passing of early voting legislation and the upcoming assembly bill, which would allow cities to write their own laws designating eligible voters. Are there any changes you'd like to see made beyond this? Same-day registration, no recent absentee ballots, election holidays, etc. So my understanding, that's from Alex. Thank you, Alex. My understanding is, so far, the changes with voting is early voting, voting by mail, and not having to re-register if you move within the state are all done. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's happening.
And
yes.
Consolidating the primaries.
Okay, and consolidating the primaries. Voted for it, Harry Brownson, yes?
Yeah, I voted for the entire package and am a co-sponsor on all of it.
Okay.
I voted no, and I also have explanations if we want to get to it.
Okay, we'll do that in a second. Where did you vote?
Voted yes on all of them except for same-day voting and registration.
Okay, why is that?
Well, there's a bill down there. I explained this on the floor, but there's a bill down there to have a waiting period up to 10 days to buy a gun or a weapon. And we need to do background checks. And I don't think that instantaneous registration and voting on the same day, you're not even going to know what polling place to go to. So registration and voting on election day, I think is really premature. I think we really need to be able to check and see if people are actually, first of all, if they're a citizen. Number two, if they have the requirements to have lived in the state or the district long enough, whatever it might be. We want background checks for guns and other things. So let's have a background check to make sure that someone's eligible to vote. But all the other bills I voted yes on.
Okay. And you voted no on all of them, Assemblywoman Burns. Why is that? Okay.
I voted no on the early primaries. Because while I recognize that Congress, the congressional and federal one, is in June, this would obviously make it all the time in June for all the elections, or at least the not town and village, but everything else. But anyway, what it does is it forces candidates and committee people to go out in the winter. You have to start passing petitions the end of February, have them in by April 1st, at a time when in my area we have snow. We don't have sidewalks on most of the streets. We don't have houses up even near roads, and sometimes it can be miles between houses. So I think it and it's dark at 6 o'clock. I think it poses serious safety concerns. We warn people not to walk their dogs in the wintertime and to be careful because of the increase in accidents that can happen in safety concerns. Yet we're going to intentionally send out people to campaign in this weather. I also do have concerns with the early voting. With right now, it's hard, very hard for the counties to get election inspectors. This is going to require election inspectors not just on the election day or primary day, but also for a number of days leading up to it where early voting is allowed. And so they're going to have to pay for and staff these, which is going to be another unfunded mandate on the counties. And then even at the end of the day, there's no provisions made for what's going to happen to these voting machines overnight. I think that there's risks with the integrity of the system. Right now, as soon as the polls are closed in our county, the sheriff's department takes all the information, delivers it directly to the Board of Elections so that there's an absolute chain of custody, so that there's no question about any tampering, electronic or otherwise. And I think this makes it potentially more susceptible to fraud and to computer hackers and increases the cost dramatically by having to have this polling place staffed and secured for a prolonged period of time.
Okay. Assemblyman Bronson, I suspect you disagree with some of that. I know you voted yes on all of those.
I voted yes on all of this, and for the reason that it is vitally important for our citizens' voices to be heard through the election process. By passing these measures, we're addressing some of the barriers. We're giving more accessibility. We're making it easier for voters to cast their vote and have their voices heard. Are there logistical things to address? Absolutely. Other states have done most of these things. So, you know, we know there's ways that we can do this. We will be asking for funding to help our localities in this regard. I will also be asking for on-demand ballots to make it easier for the counties to address early voting. And I've had conversations with Commissioner Frazee about some of the logistical things that we're going to have to look at to make this happen. But, you know, with all due respect, the inconvenience to the candidates and the timeline with consolidating primaries and things of that nature are far outweighed by the interest of having voters have their voices heard.
And we will, listeners, we will cover the changes coming your way extensively on future programs. I mean, that is an entire separate conversation, and everyone ought to know what the changes are and what they mean for having the opportunity to vote. So let's do a couple of other things here before we get to more of your feedback, because there's a lot already. One of the first acts that your party, the Democrats, did was help pass GENDA, which I know you have been a vocal supporter of for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
How important was this to you?
You know, I'm a member of the LGBT community, and in 2002, long before I was involved in politics at all, I was an activist at that point, and we passed the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act. In order to get it over the Senate Republican, the Republican-controlled Senate, we had to not address non-discrimination on the basis of gender identity and gender expression. 17 years later, folks in the trans community and in the gender nonconforming community are going to have protections. Let's talk about what this is, and I said it on the floor. I don't want to hear about bathrooms. I don't want to hear about lockers. That is not what this bill is about. This bill is about not being able to have an employer fire somebody simply because of who they are and what they look like. This bill is about making sure that a person cannot be evicted out of their apartment simply because of who they are, what they look like. And you can go on, banking areas and the housing areas in general. This is about giving a group of our citizens the same protections that all of us sitting around this table right now have. And if people want to go to that graphic discussion, which is just a red flag, and it is diverting from the real issue. You have to ask yourself this question. Prior to passing this law, two-thirds of the citizens in the state were covered under city and locality ordinances that offered that protection. There has not been one single complaint out of this state regarding abuses that may occur from a transgender person.
Did it matter to you to see this come up so early in the legislative session?
This and banning conversion therapy was huge. As I indicated, gender. I've been fighting for that for 17 years. You asked in the beginning of the program about the dynamic changing. We always used the Senate Republican control, the Senate controlled by Republicans as an excuse or an explanation. And indeed, having this on the first week that we've done extensive work, it says that indeed the world is changing and we can address some of these injustices that are in our state.
All right. Assemblyman Johns, what did you vote on gender?
I voted negative on the gender bill because I had some issues that Harry brought up. I do agree with Harry on everything he says. I just think there was some wording loophole type language in the bill that, who knows, maybe it'll be tested. I could be wrong.
So your biggest concern with gender is what, Mark? Be specific.
The fact that somebody that identifies or says they identify as a woman, the Curves, you remember the Women's Health Club, Curves, wrote a memo saying they were against it because they're concerned, as Harry said, it's probably not going to be a problem, but they're concerned about showering, locker rooms, having men, women walking around unclothed, and saying, well, you know what, it's okay because I identify as a woman. And I'm not an expert on this. I defer to Harry on a lot of that.
But you voted no. So I'm curious to know if you voted no based on what you hear from constituents, or are you also concerned about that?
Well, I'm concerned about it is the way the law is written. That's why I voted no, that there could be that type of loophole. Harry says there isn't.
What Harry's saying is that's sort of a red herring, that there really haven't been cases where people who are transgender or pose as transgender to try to abuse people.
Right.
In other words, if you want to abuse someone, there's a lot of different things you could do. Going into a bathroom stall, which is also walled off anyway, we haven't really seen that. You know what I mean?
You're right. And who would know? I mean, when you're using a bathroom, would know?
Sure.
And who would care, really? I just think it's when people are unclothed, walking around locker rooms and showers together.
Okay.
That was a concern that, you know, some women called and emailed my office. That Women's Health Club was sent out a memo.
So you heard from constituents on it?
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Okay, and you're nodding over there. Yes. So you voted no.
Yes, and I heard from a lot of constituents also.
What did they tell you?
A lot of the same concerns that Mark Johns just expressed, and it isn't, you know, the reference to the bathroom bill. It isn't that, but they are concerned about if you're in a situation where you're showering, and a lot of places do have. Or don't have individual stalls for showering and things of that nature, or you step outside with just a towel on, and they were just concerned. But other than that, I really did think that some of the executive proclamations made by the governor previously and regulations that have been in place for a couple of years have adequately, as far as I can tell,
address
up to this
issue?
Point, address the issue.
And
so I didn't see the need that it needed to be codified at this point.
But if there's a Republican governor, then the previous governor's executive orders are tossed out the window. So either you think this should be codified or it shouldn't, and the governor's actions are probably irrelevant, all right? I mean, I don't mean to be flip here. I'm just trying to understand if, again, both you and Mark are saying our constituents were worried about this, and you got mail from constituents. I understand that. Did your vote reflect that, or did it reflect your own concerns?
Both.
Okay. So your main concern...
And again, but I also think, and, you know, I absolutely understand the need for everybody in our society to be respected and to be listened to and to have their concerns heard. But in a situation where you might come across somebody that you're not expecting who appears to be of a different sex, and you know, you're a woman, all of a sudden there's a guy there, I can see how that would be shocking and upsetting. And you know, again, maybe we still need some more education in our society, but there are people that are worried about that and are concerned about it, and I'm representing my constituents.
Okay. Well, if I just may, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but it's I think it's important for my colleagues to understand. You know, we were just talking in a broader way about people who are in the lower income level or the middle income level. Transgender people have a higher level of unemployment because they can be discriminated against. Transgender people don't have the right we have for full employment because an employer can just say, I don't like the way you look, so you're fired. These are your constituents, Marjorie. These, and if you look at the polling that's been done on this issue, the majority, a significant majority of people in your party supported passing this bill. So, you know, I just, and you're right, we do need a lot of education. I came back, and well, let me back up, and I said this on the floor, so you already heard it, but for the listeners, every year I participate in the Transgender Day of Remembrance. These are people we lose either through suicide or because they're murdered simply because of who they are. That is wrong, wrong, wrong. And that this bill gives a little bit of legal protection. It makes them closer to equality as us. But you're right on, Assemblywoman, when you said we need more education about this issue and a better understanding. A 16-year-old boy is not going to pretend to be a girl to go into a locker room. It's not going to happen. They have a hard enough time identifying and addressing and really coming to grips with their own sexuality. They're not going to tell their friends, I'm a girl, just so they can go in and look at girls. It's not going to happen. It doesn't happen. Where this law is in place, it doesn't happen. So I just, you know, I hope that through further conversation and education that we can all get on the same page on this. And Mark, I think that, in time, I hope we'll see that those problems aren't going to come up.
Right. Well, I hope you're right, Harry. And I did vote against conversion therapy with a little help and guidance from my good...
You voted to ban conversion therapy.
Well, in the past, yes, I did. In the past, yes, I did. But I've seen the light. I really don't want to have...
You're on the same page as the point. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I want to make sure I understand. Conversion therapy has been banned in New York State, or at least it was passed.
Passed in both houses.
Yeah.
And the Assemblymember Johns and I had lengthy conversation, and he voted in favor of banning conversion therapy.
Was part of it based on your conversations with Assemblyman Bronson?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look at that. Okay. We're late for our only break of the hour. And what I want to do is come back and hit some more subjects. Assemblyman Bronson mentioned prevailing wage. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about more if we talk about economic development in all parts of New York State and what our guests here are hoping happens in this legislative session to spur economic development from a state perspective. The governor put some other ideas out there for state of the state. We talked about banning plastic bags. We'll ask what they think about that. Cigarette buying, the Reproductive Rights Act, marijuana. We're going to try to get through all of that in about 12 and a half minutes. So let's get that break and come right back. Coming up in our second hour, the Rochester Historical Society is in trouble. Financially, their home, 8,000 square feet, is too much to support, and there are many historical objects in their care. We're wondering what happens if they close. Where do those objects go? What happens next? Can someone step up to support and maintain our historical society? We'll talk about our history next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Members of the Assembly with us as we talk about legislative business in Albany. Democrat Harry Bronson, Republicans Marjorie Burns and Mark Johns are with us. Yesterday on this program, we talked about early intervention services. And we talked to, over the last couple of months, we've talked to a number of people who help kids who need help with speech, They need special education help. They need intervention with hearing, other challenges. And the concern being, the later you go, the more of a severe long-term impact. In New York State, the rates of reimbursement have actually gone down since the mid-90s. And based on a rate of inflation, if you take the sort of the mid-late 90s rate of reimbursement for New York State, it'd be about $145. And now it's, $90. So it's much lower than it would be based on where it was in the 90s. And as a result, just about everybody who's in the service work there says there's a crisis in early intervention. Now, you've had County Executive Cheryl Donolfo say, all right, Monroe County is going to step up in the short term and try to at least help with this, but we cannot bear the burden, and this is a state problem. And yesterday, just about everybody who works agreed with the county executive. They said that the state is going to have to fix this long term. So let's go around the table. Assemblyman Bronson, has the state made a mistake here? Do you see this as a state error, and is something going to change?
I believe that we need to do a better job of the reimbursement rate. I've met with many of the folks in this industry who have really been fighting hard for that. So I'm going to be fighting for additional funding in the reimbursement rate. I'm also, though, there's another bill that would authorize additional people who are qualified to do the assessment. Right now, we have a shortage of people because of a weird technicality, the way the law is written. So I'm going to be working on both of those.
Okay. How do you feel about Assemblywoman Burns?
Well, I must confess I'm still in the learning stage.
Yeah, that's
so
okay.
I'll be very interested to see a lot of perspectives in the near future. I'm sure they're going to come flooding in.
I think that's perfectly valid for a freshman member of the Assembly, because this is an issue that's kind of picking up steam now. So Assemblyman Johns, have you heard much on this, and how do you feel about it?
We need more funding. I agree with Harry. Early childhood intervention, people with disabilities, they're trying to cut OPWDD and other things that I think will be restored before the April 1st deadline. But I do agree we need more money going into those programs.
All right. Nick wants to know what the panel is going to vote when it comes to plastic bags. The governor says ban plastic bags. Yes or no, Mark Johns?
I'm going to have to see how the legislation is written. I haven't seen it. I'm against the plastic that we see out in the ocean, and it's mostly coming from China.
Not a whole lot of people are for plastic in the ocean.
I got 100% there, you know. But the fact is, Evan, that a lot of this plastic, not just bags, it finds its way into rivers, creeks, streams, lakes. It winds up in the fish population that we wind up eating. It's a real problem, and I'd like to look at that legislation. I think we should do all these things at a national level, but I'd like to look at it. We did ban a couple years ago plastic, the little plastic beads and granules that go into toothpaste.
The microbeads, yep.
Yeah, the microbeads, right. So, you know, I mean, they're so small you can't see them, but they wind up in the, they wind up out in nature in the fish and aquatic life, and we actually do eat that, and you bring it into your system.
All right, so on plastic bags, you want to see the legislation, you're open to it, haven't made up your mind yet.
Right.
Fair? Okay. How do you feel about it?
I would agree. And if I remember correctly, wasn't it that we replaced paper with plastic not too long ago? So I'm not sure what we go to if we don't have paper, don't have plastic to get our groceries home. On the other hand, the devil is always in the details. So let's see what the legislation is and make an intelligent decision.
Okay, Assemblyman Bronson.
I'm going to be supporting a complete ban. There'll be some discussions about should we have a deposit fee on the bags to require them to get returned. There's other mechanisms that people are looking at. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that a complete ban is going to be necessary.
Can I just add one quick aside? Mm-hmm. They're not really just single-use bags, because even people who don't bring them back for recycling are using them for their garbage rather than buying more plastic bags, are using those ones and things of that nature. So I don't see them as being single use and thrown out.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Harry, there's some of those bags you might not want back, because I know people are walking those dogs with the bags. So you may not want those ones back.
I'm one of them.
Okay, so we'll try to move as quickly as we can. The governor has talked about marijuana. Is this state going to legalize marijuana anytime soon, recreational marijuana?
I think they will, but I think they should go slower. There is some problems.
Okay.
I absolutely agree. There's a lot of problems with the ramifications down the road. It is opposed by medical societies because of its effects on the body, and we're going to have a lot more driving while ability under the influence statutes drafted.
All right, so right now you're a no on that.
I would say right now I'm leaning no.
Okay. Assemblyman Bronson.
I'm a yes, assuming certain things happen. Number one, we need to expunge misdemeanor marijuana offenses automatically, not through application. The governor indicated in his State of the State that he was willing to automatically seal the records. I think we need to just get rid of those records in totality. Number two, and this is the Crystal People-Stokes bill, a portion of the revenues need to go to the communities that have been most adversely impacted by the criminalization of marijuana. And in that, I include entrepreneurial services to help those folks start up small businesses to be a part of it. I disagree with the idea of only letting corporations and the medical marijuana system that we put in place. I would not want to do that for this system. The next item that I would require is that some of the funds go into alcohol and substance abuse programs so that we can continue to educate our citizens. And then lastly, you know, we do have to address safety on the roadways. You know, the chemistry of marijuana is very different than the chemistry of alcohol. We can't use the same testing mechanisms, but we can use what a lot of people get pulled over with DWI because of law enforcement observation or citizens observation. So we can rely on that, but I would want to encourage the science to catch up with this.
Okay. On prevailing wages, you mentioned it right off the top. That's one of the things, I think that's your bill, isn't it?
Sure is.
That the governor talked about. In about a minute or so, because I'm going to try to squeeze in another phone call from a listener, tell me about it.
Prevailing wage, the Constitution says that labor is not a commodity in this state, and that when labor is used by the state, it needs to be paid prevailing wage, the wage prevailing for that industry in that geographical area. That's the definition. What has happened is there's no statutory definition of what is public works. So the case law has chipped away, and now that we're in private partnership dynamics of how we fund what traditionally were just public works project, what this bill would do is very globally say, if the state's subsidizing the project, then it needs to be built with prevailing wage.
Okay. Economic development, what's the main goal here? Fairness?
Economic development, we have two studies, one out of Cornell and one out of Colorado University, a doctor in economy out of Colorado, a labor specialist out of Cornell. Both of them show that you actually can save money if you pay prevailing wage because you have higher skilled workers, you don't have labor unrest, the project gets done on time, you don't have to take corrective action during the project or maintenance after, and you typically hire local contractors, local workers, who then go back into the communities and put more money into our economies.
Well, Andrew in Aranaco has been listening to all of this, and he's still thinking he might want to move out of state. Let me get his phone call. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, no, I'm not still thinking. I just started thinking about it.
Oh, okay.
We were decided that we would stay, but the state budget went up by 2% this year, and you guys refuse to you know, you say, well, if it goes 2% every year, in 10 years from now, we're going to be paying 20% more, and then in 20 years, we're going to be paying 40% more, and it's crazy. We can't afford it. We just started thinking, wait a minute, we're going to be too old to work, and you guys are going to raise our taxes by 40%? Come on. It's crazy. And besides, we don't even have a representative democracy in New York. Three people behind closed doors do the budget every year. You guys don't even have a job. It doesn't make any sense to us.
All right. But, Andrew, thank you. Simon Johns wants to jump on that. Go ahead.
Right. First of all, the three people in a room, I think there should be cameras and microphones in that room. Let's see, you know, have people see how the sausage is made. We can't all be in that room. But you know what? I think in, you know, like the newspapers and the media talk about sunshine laws, let's have people see what's going on. And pay to play is a big problem in this state. and we need to have open sea and transparency. I know there's bills for that. I hope that comes through, because you can't have the big campaign donors wind up, they give tens of thousands and they get tens of millions in projects. So that's a problem as well.
Okay. He says we're spending too much as a state.
We are. Okay. I think we are. And we're our taxes and our regulations are driving people out of my district, and it's losing population. And we have to fight, and I'll be their voice to try to keep them here by doing my best to eliminate it.
About 20 seconds. Is there a place that you see spending that you could cut right now that sort of bothers you? You would tell callers like Andrew, hey, look, this is where we can trim the fat starting right here.
Again, as the newbie, what I got to do is look at the budget,
okay,
because there's no doubt that there is. It's where it's targeted.
Okay,
Evan, we're losing population. 100,000 people in Western and Upstate New York. We're probably in 22 going to lose a congressional seat, which people say, who cares about a career politician? But it's also money, billions of dollars from the feds that you're not going to get. So we really got to do something to keep people, especially in New York and Upstate New York.
30 seconds, Assemblyman Bronson. What's your pitch to tell Andrew that maybe he's got the wrong picture?
If he looks at his taxes from 8 years ago to today, he will see that his income taxes are lower. If he's part of the lower or middle class, he will see that manufacturing taxes are lower than they were 8 years ago. He will see that we place property tax cap on localities. I have a little bit of issue with that, but it has been effective in some regards. It's not the taxes that people typically are leaving from this area. It's because they're looking for jobs. So we have to continue to invest in economic development.
All right. So some points of agreement, some points of disagreement, and I think a healthy discussion on a lot of the issues that face New York State that have either already come up or are going to come up in the months to come. And I hope that all three of our guests, Mark Johns, Marjorie Burns, Harry Brunson, members of the New York State Assembly, will be back to continue those discussions. It is tremendously helpful for our listeners. Thank you for your accessibility and for your discussion here. Thanks to all of you for being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, short break, more connections coming up.